Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Twisted Tuesday with the Twisted Sisters. Yep, Twisted Tuesday, 2/22/22. I don't think that'll happen again, not in my lifetime or anybody I know's lifetime. Hi, Pam. Hi, Naomi. Welcome to the party.
Hello,
hi.
Hello.
Hey, Naomi.
Good to hear you both. Hi.
Yeah. So Tuesday it is. What do you all got to say
that? Yep, like you said, it's 2/22/22. That's a whole heck of a lot of twos.
It sure is. And I love the fact that someone I love it. That was that just made it all complete. So
absolutely.
Anyway, it's good to have you guys here. I'm glad to have the three of us around and hanging out, and I'm looking forward to the poetry tonight. And Pam, why don't you go ahead and tell us about the prompt and, you know, what sparked you and where we went from?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to. Well, first of all, I decided that'd be fun because I know at least a couple times before you have ran a contest for one of our Twisted Tuesday shows where it was Tell Us a Story. And so I decided it would be fun to do the same thing. And I chose two different artists. I chose Amy Brown, who's an American fantasy artist, because she mainly paints fairies, angels, woodland creatures, fantasy creatures. And she's been painting since like the 1990s. And then I had chosen Modestas Malinkas, who is a Lithuanian artist. He's also a fantasy artist, but his paintings tend to be more surreal. And he also will tend to paint, ships, boats, planes, hot air balloons, zeppelins, and then a very surrealistic and fantasy type style. So I thought, you know, if I combine the two of them by having Amy Brown's artwork, I'll provide the characters, and with Modestas Malinkas's artwork, I will have provided something for them, perhaps visitors coming to their land, or a different element to be worked into the story. So I'm definitely, I did do some previewing of our rights for tonight, and we got a great lineup of poetry and stories that I am definitely looking forward to delving into.
Well, that is just awesome. I'm glad to hear that. It's been a crazy week already, and it's only Tuesday. What is that? Feels
right?
Like anyway. Feels busy. I'm like, how funny is that?
I'm just getting all the alcohol out of my system from the weekend. I had my son's birthday party, so the whole family over, and I had I told Pam earlier, I just had like way too much wine. But fun.
Sounds like it was a fun weekend. Yeah, and of course, as always, looking forward to hanging out with you two and other cool poets. I think it's going to be a fun night.
We do have a couple callers already. So whenever the party starts, me know.
Let's go ahead and bring them on.
Okay, the first call we had was Celtic Queen. And hello, Celtic Queen. How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Glad you could join us.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, it's fun.
And then next we have Thomas B. on the line. So hello, Thomas.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Tom. Glad you could join us. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
It's awesome to hear. Okay. Well, I guess, Pam, it's your baby.
All right. Well, here we go. And up first, I have River Rights by Eric Svensson. And Tom, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay, let me just find where I am here. Here it is. River Rights by Eric Svensson. River, naked. Silvery butterfly wings spread wider. Unfold where yellow finches weave. Red bishops cleave to sweet bulrush flags. Sunrise proboscis probes nascent nectar, sips of dainty tiara, spiderweb dewdrops, supine suspension floats obsidian, eyes, skin whistle frisks, feels thermal ladder, curved beak points to moist fern enclave below, naked rivers, rippled washboard abdomen, butterflies, silvery butterfly wings, unfold further to accommodate, carp, kiss, smooth pebble, vertebrae, backbone below, bedrock, effleurage, expands, spread of wide watery wings. Blue dragonflies hover above serene white arum lily face. Effervescent aerial halo crowns Ophelia's head, framed by weeping willow tresses. She dreams a blue monarch butterfly on toadstool pedestal. Waits her prince, green heartbeats, fleet rainbow river ripples, silvery butterfly wings gurgle wakefulness. Rise, O fairest Ophelia, weep no more for thy prince awaits. Sadness, chrysalis cracked, two red hearts shall beat like one forevermore. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Eric. I'm not Eric, sorry. and a wonderful write by Eric. And let's start out with you, Naomi. What are your thoughts on Eric's poem?
Yeah, well, first of all, that was an awesome, awesome read there, Tom. Yeah, I just love this write. You know, it's full of color, imagery, you know, it's just whimsical all throughout. I just love the, you know, the stanzas there, the effervescent aerial halo crowns Ophelia's head framed by weeping willow tresses. That's so beautiful there, weeping willow tresses. She dreams a blue monarch butterfly on toadstool pedestal waits her prince, green heartbeat, pleats rainbow river ripples, another beautiful line. And in the silvery butterfly wings gurgle wakefulness. It's just, he captured so eloquently with such beautiful softness. And, you know, he captured that, the enchanting magic of the artist, you know, just brilliantly worded throughout this piece. Just awesome.
Absolutely. And I do have to agree with you. There is definitely a softness to this rite. And Celtic Queen, your thoughts on Eric's rite?
I thought it was very descriptive with its use of color and its description of a butterfly with the washboard abdomen and silvery wings. I thought it was very nice.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. And Jean, your thoughts?
This is a great piece by Eric. No, I had myself on mute, and this is a little slow. But I think Eric did a wonderful job with this piece. It was a wonderful take on the prompts to choose from. Wonderful imagery, and it was typical Eric. It was very well done and very descriptive. Enjoyed. Thanks, Eric.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And Tom, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, I like how he starts with the river naked and then takes us into different descriptions of butterflies. So even the sun, proboscis, probes, and astians, nectar, becomes part of the butterfly imagery. And then just as we're becoming thoroughly enchanted by the way wings and colors and magic dazzles the eye, he brings in Ophelia almost as if to say, there is a human quotient in this that needs to be respected because in midst all this magic, it is here to perform one thing. Oh, rise, fair Ophelia, weep no more for thy prince awake. And so all this butterfly madness is just to create a wondrous and magical love for a princess who has drawn us into her splendor. Beautifully done.
It really is. It really is. And yeah, great observation there about how with the ending bringing in Ophelia and bringing in that kind of almost that sense of humanity and sadness and idea of that crack that opens up so that love can have a place. And I do really like the references to the butterfly imagery throughout stanzas. I thought it was a great metaphor. I thought this was beautiful storytelling. As everybody has mentioned, just a wonderful imagery. I know Celtic Queen mentioned the use of color. I thought that was beautiful, too. And the spine suspension floats obsidian eyes. That whole stanza was really nice. But, you know, just absolutely beautiful alliteration all the way through. And, you know, just a wonderful story in the idea of those dreams that, you know, become reality when all we have to do is wake. So just excellent right here, Eric, and very well done. All right. And go ahead and put up the next poem. And up next we have Captain Ahab and the Dirigible by Daniel Duhame and Celtic Queen. Will you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. Ignitos roared to life as the engine came to life, and the dirigible took to the sky with Captain Ahab as the helmsman. Built from balsa wood for the frame and fabric sewn together to form a huge bladder, then inflated with a bicycle pump. The dirigible took off into the sky with only the stars and a compass to guide him to many adventures, to words faraway lands. Ahab sat down to eat a lunch he packed for the journey, unaware of the storm brewing in the sky. Lightning cracked above him, making him aware of the storm, so he looked for a place to land without any trees. Slowly he let some air out, being careful of not letting out too much, and descending rapidly and crashing the huge dirigible, landing softly upon the ground. Captain Ahab decided to explore this land he sat down in, so he grabbed his coat and descended the wooden ramp of the dirigible and walked off until he came upon what could be described as a tiny village with tiny houses made from wood as small as matchsticks. He thought this most peculiar. After all, who built these dwellings? And with that, to his amazement, he saw, out of a corner of his eye, a tiny fairy going inside. None thinks they are real, except in fairy tales. But here it was, a village of fairies hidden away from prying eyes, decided that it would be best if this place was kept secret, because you mustn't disturb fairies in their work. So he walked back to the dirigible, which was when the storm had cleared. So he entered the ship and flew back home, all the while thinking to himself that he had enough adventures for one day. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Celtic Queen. And I have to say, I really enjoyed this story. Daniel writes some amazing rhyming poetry with metaphor and imagery, especially his works tend to me to be more like metaphorical. And so to see somebody do something that, you know, to me is a little different than what I'm used to of them, I think is really cool. First of all, and I like that. And what I also really like about this one is how he has such an attention to detail. There's almost an innocence here in the way, this is the type of story that both the young and the old could like. And the attention to detail, like how he mentions that the frame is made from balsa wood and the fabric is sewn together to form a huge bladder. And then inflated with a bicycle pump. To me, that just added to the delight of the story. And then to have it be that whole idea of, you know, here's somebody who could have destroyed a land, but instead saw the beauty and magic of these fairies and their small houses and chose to let them be. And to me, I feel like every good story has a moral lesson. And this one ends with that whole idea of that moral lesson of, you know, leave things as you found them, leave well enough alone and let people lead their lives in peace. So just a stunning use of storytelling and very well done. And Tom, let's start with your thoughts.
Well, there's definitely a strong, Jules Verne feeling to this as well as almost a Tom Swiftian sense of childhood joy combined together, the idea of Captain Ahab and the original, and the way that it has almost a cartoonish and childish picture of the way all those things work, built from balsa wood for the frame and fabric sewn together to form a huge bladder, then invaded with a bicycle pump. You can see almost the cartoon language begin to create this wonderful adventure. And then when he takes it to the fairies and describes it with matchstick pieces of wood, you begin to realize how delicately the cartoon, the imagination, the sense of wonder and magic has come together to create a world where we once realized that what is generous and what is good often comes by letting those who we love and are fascinated by have enough peace and dignity without our interference. And then I love the way he ends it, almost like tying off a dream of a child and bringing it to rest before they rise to take on the adventure of terror of the whole new, brand new day. Quite beautifully done.
Absolutely. Great observations there. I like how you mentioned that it had that Jules Verne type feel to it, because it really did. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, that was an amazing read. And, you know, me too, I'm you know, surprised and happy to see Daniel take on these prompts in such a wonderful, amazing way, you know. I thought it was so clever that he took Captain Ahab, you know, from Moby Dick. And, you know, it's like a mystical mix between Pixie Land here and Gulliver's Travels and Moby Dick here, and you know, all enrolled in mystical enchantment, and you know, just such delightful storytelling here. I just love, like you said, you know, what the part that you the he inflated the huge bladder, and then that he inflated with a bicycle pump. That let's just and then the matchstick houses, you know, it just makes it more whimsical, the whole thing. Just a wonderful, wonderful write throughout, you know, a wonderful story here told. So bravo, Danielle. It's an awesome job.
Absolutely. And you're right, the Captain Ahab was a nice nod to Moby Dick. And so wonderful observations there, Naomi. And Celtic Queen, you read that beautifully. Your thoughts?
Thank you. When I first started this, I had not read it before I started reading it, but it sounded to me, and it doesn't say it, but it sounded to me like a child playing or imagining when it talks about the bicycle pump. I mean, you know, Captain Ahab's not going to use a bicycle pump. And then when it talked about eating lunch that he had packed for the journey. And again, when it says he took his coat before he left, I could hear in the background his mother saying, don't forget your coat. You know, it seemed like a child's imaginings. I really enjoyed it. It was a great story.
Absolutely. And I really like that observation because, yeah, you're right. It does have that feel to it of a child playing in their imaginary world. So great comment
there.
Yeah,
he's got his balsa wood airplane and, you know.
Absolutely. Very cool. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was a wonderful, whimsical tale that was told. Very well done. I love the imagery in the story he had to tell. I think he did a great job with this. Something about this is familiar, and I can't place it in my head, but I can almost see this dirigible, and I can see this childlike images. I don't know if it's something I've seen at one point, you know, some short movie or cartoon-type thing that I have seen. But gosh, it just seems so familiar. But I think he did a wonderful job. Very descriptive and an excellent tale, really. So I enjoyed it. Thanks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there, Jean. All right. And wonderful comments, everybody. All right. And up next, we have The Millennium by S. Sharp. And Naomi, will you give that a read for us, please?
Of course. The Millennium, the skies oozed and simmered as the promised millennium of expectation approached. Like Noah's Ark, the people and animals aboard cried out to us hill people, islanders. Some called us, each farming our own mounds and souls in the blood of Christ, waiting for the ship to arrive. And here it was, as trumpets played and echoed in the caves and recesses of my mind. I watched as trees turned into hot air balloons and singing bounded from each and every one, angels lifting souls. I saw images, apparitions, hallucinations maybe, as pictures painted on the clouds began to speak to me. We have come for you. Mom, is that you? I asked. I have missed you, son. Her voice sprinkled down upon me, a mist that quenched a thirst I did not know I had. Rays of starlight reached out like a hand pointing the path into the distance. Grab a hold of the trees, she said as suddenly. All the clouds lifted and the sky shimmered in the deepest reaches, blend of colors, orange, purple, blue, red, and pink. Mom, I yelled. However, the trumpets were playing and angels were singing and she was gone. I spun around, a whirlwind of thoughts drenched me, a deluge of emotion. I closed my eyes, touching the tree, which seemed to grab a hold of my hand. I felt weightless, floating with angels ascending. As the day turned to night, the trumpets blared and the angels continued to sing. End poem.
wonderful read there, Naomi, and definitely a great write that touches on the idea of the end times by S. Sharp. And Celtic Queen, let's start with your thoughts.
Well, I was trying to make it match the pictures, and it at the bottom he says it's picture number 10 from MM, and I haven't seen that. It does sound like end times, except it refers to Noah's Ark. So it sounds like perhaps he's thinking of his impending death or something, dreaming of it. Guys oozed and simmered, and the promised millennium of expectation approached. It's just approaching. It doesn't say it's here. So I don't quite know what he's thinking of, but it's quite real. It's almost scary because the angels are coming down, and then his mother's there, but she's gone. And, you know, he obviously was looking forward to seeing her because her voice was coming down on him like a mist, quenching a thirst he didn't know he had. So it's a curious poem and one that requires more thought than I have time to give right now. It's very interesting.
It is, absolutely. I have to agree with you. And some rites do require more thoughts than others, but I appreciate mm-hmm. the comment. And to me, what I think makes this interesting is that he does put in elements of the book of Revelations from the Bible
yes.
and of
yes.
the end times. And I think that's part of what makes it a little scary, but at the same time also spiritual in nature. And this is another one I feel like I think it brings out in that one stanza the whole idea of the joy of seeing somebody who has passed on like a mother. And then,
right.
you know, and then the scariness of realizing that, you know, all of a sudden things are very confusing. And there's a lot going on. But, powerful imagery and storytelling and very well done. And, Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with our previous speaker. There is a lot of confusion here. But it is almost as if the ending is coming. Revelation is before us. The things are beginning as quickly as they're ending. I like the comment from the mother, grab a hold of the trees.
Grab hold of the trees.
You know, find something concrete. Find something real. Because so much of what is going on around you is like the noise of celebration. It is happening, but it isn't important. It's just the celebration of the beginning and the end. And that what you need to do to maintain your own sanity and to move through this chaos safely is grab a hold of the trees. I just like that because it was like this sudden way of anchoring yourself amidst the deluge of emotion as I closed my eyes, touching the trees, which seemed to grab a hold of my hand, and I felt weightless, floating with the angels. So even as he becomes aware of what is concrete, the magnificence of the moment overwhelms. I thought that was an interesting way of taking on the whole idea.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Great comment there, Tom. And Naomi, you read that wonderfully. Wait, did Naomi read it? Yeah, you did. Okay, I'm sorry. Gosh. you read that wonderfully. And your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I love Tom's observations and comment on this. You know, I didn't think of it farther than, you know, the end of the coming of Christ upon the earth, like revealed in the book of Revelations. I didn't really think beyond that, but you know, the tree, you know, like the tree of life, grab a hold of the tree. I just love that that he mentioned that. It puts a deeper sense into the whole poem. I thought this poem was very touching. You know, the way he talks to his mother, and he and her voice sprinkled down upon me a mist that quenched a thirst I did not know I had. I thought this was very touching, right, you know, and I'm amazed that he took that picture. And, you know, it is like Noah's Ark, you know, with all, you know, that's going on. And I put the picture up there in the room for everybody to see it. But it is like huge Noah's Ark in some way, you know. And I can see his inspiration, you know, within that picture here to write this right. It's just clever, I think. There's a whole aura of spirituality that surrounding this poem, as is the picture if you look at it in a certain way. So just a brilliant write by S. Sharp.
Absolutely. Well said there, Naomi. Yeah, I too liked this one. All the way through is a great write, but I was particularly fond of that second and third stanza where it had the line about grabbing onto the tree and how it showed the love and protectiveness of a mother, and how it had this wonderful imagery and use of colors and the blend of colors, orange, purple, blue, red, and pink. There was such a fast pace to this story that you could feel the intensity of it. I thought it was beautifully written and very well done. And, all right. Now, Tom, I got your poem up, our story, so go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Yeah, something much lighter, her view. Call her Grace. One for the spring wind. The next to keep my love beside me. Let the rainbow light dance on till night. Let me be the greatest fairy found on the breeze. She tied her thoughts in thistle and dew, buried a dream and hope the gods knew, where once the joy had floated her wings. The way was lost in bubbles, trying to restart her heart, let the fountains of magic be born again. Who knew a stranger tied with linens of star, walking paths of shadows and cloaked with the ink blackness where we all fall so far. You forget there's a bottom and only want to hear the rush of forever cry all our tears. He stole into her life and treasured her laughter. He awoke in her dreams of starlight, promised an indelible love that got her. She let go of her freedom and tied herself into his arms. When the day burst into her eyes, he was gone. Emptiness is never a song. Nothing that hums or asks you to carry on. Love warms you and fills you with joy. When the loved one is gone, nothing comes to fill the heart, and you reach out for answers to explain why the one you want to be with is gone. So she sits on a thistle near the edge of doubt, blowing rainbows and bubbles that glisten and gleam, dance on maybes and hopes not quite seen. wonders if he'll ever return or she will find out what happened, what it all means. The bubbles dance with the sprites of the air, drift till they pop and leave a rainbow graced with tears. Her heart beats with magic. She forgets it still lives there. How easy it is to awaken to how love is never fair. How easy it is to forget who you are when love is near. End poem.
Great read there, Tom. You have a wonderful voice for adding the right amount of pause, pitch, and punch to tell a story. So very well done there. And let's go ahead and, Naomi, let's start with your thoughts.
Oh, yeah, this was wonderfully written with, and wonderfully read to Tom there. Bravo on that read. And call her Grace, you know, it goes so well with the rest of this poem, you know, that title. And, you know, it talks to us about, you know, how you can lose yourself, your freedom, your free spirit, who you are. When you do fall in love, you know, you forget yourself to a certain point there. There's so many magical lines inside of this piece. The rhyming is impeccable and the flow is just so beautiful. You know, emptiness, you know, the lines like emptiness is never a song. Nothing that hums or asks you to carry on, and she sits on a thistle near the edge of doubt, blowing rainbows and bubbles that glisten and gleam, dance on maybes and hopes not quite seen. It's just so whimsically written all the way through, and just such a beautiful, beautiful write here, Tom. You know, with a deep, powerful message inside. So just brilliantly done.
Yes, great comment.
This is Celtic.
Here,
may I
absolutely
comment next?
Absolutely.
Tom, I am a widow. This poem brought tears to me. He stole into her life and treasured her laughter. He awoke in her dreams of starlight. Then emptiness is never a song. Love warms you and fills you with joy. This poem brought tears to me, and it still does as I read it again. It's so beautiful how easy it is to awaken to how love is never fair. How easy it is to forget who you are when love is near. This poem is real. You may have been writing it about a lover who left. Mine died, but it feels the same. Thank you for this poem.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Yeah, I have to agree, first of all, with Naomi, that there is an important message, you know, about love and about how we can oftentimes lose ourselves. But I also have to agree with Celtic Queen that it is an emotionally moving story. And although it's a fairy tale, inspired by the picture, it has that real sense of reality. Like we can, you know, none of us are ever going to be fairies sitting on a flower blowing bubbles, but, you know, we can relate to this little fantasy creature because she has gone through the same heartache and discovery of self that we have all gone through. And this is wonderful all the way through. But I particularly like The way was lost in bubbles, trying to restart her heart. Let the fountain of magic be born again. And emptiness is never a song, nothing that hums or asks you to carry on. Love warms you and fills you with joy, you know. So she puts on a thistle near the edge of doubt. I like the phrase near the edge of doubt, like kind of, you know, that whole idea of being there in the moment and going back and forth with the whole idea of, is this where I belong, or do I need to move forward? Just a beautiful story and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
I have to agree with Celtic Queen. I think there was a wonderful element of truth and reality. And I think that that's what made it so endearing. And yet, Pam, you're especially not going to catch me sitting on a thistle. I'm going to tell you that. But I think that it was, you know, there was a wonderful element of love, melancholy. You know, in places it was melancholy. It was hope.
Yes.
And, you know, I also agree with Naomi. You know, there was grace. And the whole thing was, and I don't usually use this word, but it was elegant throughout. It had this way about it.
It was.
Yeah, it just had a wonderful, wonderful feel to it. And, Tom, I think you really outdid yourself with this one. I mean, even though
it was beautiful.
So, wonderful job, and thank you so much for sharing with us. That was great.
I always feel like that if you can really show what magic is, the truth of it reaches into all of us.
Right, right. Mm. Absolutely.
A
bit of magical melancholy. And I didn't know how really to say that, but I think that really kind of summed it up in my head. It was melancholy, but there was this hint of magic behind it. That just twisted it. It was great. It really was. So, nice work.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Jean. And
thank you.
All right. And Tom, I know you can't stay too much longer, so thank you for calling in. Always good to hear from you. And I hope you have a good night when you do have to go.
Well, thank you, Celtic Queen. I guess I'm going to split now because I do need to get to bed and get up early. take good care. Thank you for everything.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. All right. And up next, we have Sweet Fallen Angel by Betty Page. And it goes like this. Sweet Fallen Angels. Drifting past, floating so high, chained to broken hearts, all dressed in jet black, wickedly twisted by love, sliced bleeding wrist drip, sipping upon pain, erotically enchanted, lost within pure sin, blackened heart and mind, vicious cutting tongue as thorns, piercing intensely, swims past. In love's high melodic we sing sweet, twisted, broken mind. Wander so alone, ancient sacred birds as friends, protectors of crown, high angelic innocence, scattered and torn by this world, infinitely roams. End poem. I just got to say, this is just wonderful, classic Betty with her elements. Of darkness and sensuality. I thought she did a great way in this one of telling a story with short, impactful lines. And she chose one of the darker pieces of artwork by Amy Brown. I believe it was it was 19, which, if I remember right, it was the one of the black-winged angels surrounded by crows. And I really liked this. I particularly liked was how there was a sense of that feeling of rejection, of aloneness, but And but the, my favorite part is that she brought the birds in, and she doesn't say crows or she doesn't say ravens. She calls them ancient sacred birds, and reminds us that this angel has those friends. Those ancient sacred birds are the protector of crowns. They're not just protectors. They're friends. And they're there to take care of her as the world, you know, turns their back on her. So just a powerful and emotive rite and very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, first of all, this was so well worded throughout. You know, it's just pulls you into like a uniquely creative, enchanting aura of, you know, like you said, dark air, a kind of erotism or erotica. And yeah, erotica. I said it in French. And then, you know, the stanza swims past and loves high, melodically sings sweet, twisted, broken mind. I love the turn of words there, melodically sings sweet, twisted, broken mind. I love the flow of words there. And also, high angelic innocence tattered and torn by this world infinitely roamed. You know, like you said, Pam, the short lines just impact, you know, in throughout this rite. So just amazingly well written. Betty Page, as always, and a wonderful rite here.
Absolutely. And you're right, that one part did have a really nice flow of words to it. And so great comment there. And Celtic Queen, your thoughts?
Well, excuse me. I found it very dark and forbidding. I really did like the way she worded things, chained to broken hearts. The angels were chained to broken hearts. And by love, the sliced bleeding wrists and sipping upon pain, it was very forbidding, I thought, which probably, I didn't see the picture, but would probably go along with the picture.
It does, yes.
But her wording was great. Her wording was really great. Vicious cutting tongue as thorns piercing intensely. It's very descriptive and creates strong images.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said there. And Jean, your thoughts?
Yes. Oh, I am off mute. I thought I was killing time. I'm sorry. Betty, I think you did a good job. You know, I get like that. I thought it was a great story here, and it was a nice reflection of her chosen prompt. And dark and well done. Great work. Thanks, Betty.
Absolutely. Well said there. And, all right, Celtic Queen, I have your poem up next. Go ahead and give it a piece.
Okay. First of all, before the stanzas that have the number and the initials in parentheses, those are the pictures that I used because I used several through here. The Bedtime Story. Mummy, will you tell me a story? One that's happy and not all gory. The monster under my bed is frightened and need his anxiety level lightened. Of course, my darling, let me think. Ah, I know. I'll tell you about the great stink. Mummy, I said a happy one. This is happy. It's great fun. There once was a great flying ship made for the purpose of giving the king the slip. He was a beautiful but very cruel ruler, who only ate his favorite food, crullers. The problem was, the crullers hurt his tummy. And since he was king, he didn't listen to his mummy. She tried to get him to drink bicarbonate of soda, but he just cried, "No, I don't wanna." All he would swallow was a big orange drink. Put together with the cooler, it made a bad stink. And when his tummy was really a hurtin', farted for relief. But the smell was disconcerting. So the king climbed aboard his flying machine with its balloons and baubles and other means of staying aloft when you don't have wings, which requires you to add a lot of other things. "Oh, Mummy, you are so silly." "Well, dear, you can't add details willy-nilly." "But why does his flying machine have wheels?" "Well, it was also used to deliver hot meals, sort of a fairy welcome wagon, if you know what I mean." Our little princess tried to imagine the scene. "No, I don't know what you mean, Mummy, and I don't feel very good. I have an ache in my tummy." Mummy gasped. "Did you eat the king's crullers?" "No, I'd not eat the food of so cruel a ruler. Finish the story now, and don't tell jokes. I know you tell stories to other folks, and you're very serious and steady. Continue, please, whenever you're ready." "Okay." They flew, full of vim and lots of moxie. When they landed, they met a gigantic young foxy. Gigantic? No, gigantic! Really big. The king's emissary, no bigger than a twig, flew up to the fox and announced his arrival, hoping such a speech would ensure her survival. But the fox turned up his nose at the awful smell and sent them away as his nostrils swelled. He gave them another aeroplane, one with flaps and struts and wings and propellers and all kinds of other things. Now at the same time in another land, turn page here, lived a lovely princess who was kind in command. She often conversed with her favorite frog. She'd named him well. She called him Frog. When just as she'd had a fever that took away smell for now and forever, so she didn't smell the king as he arrived. He marched to her castle and let himself inside. Peeking at her little one, Mummy realized that her daughter, who was just pint-sized, was actually asleep and couldn't hear her. So she crept from the nursery but stayed right near her. "I'll finish the story tomorrow night. Careful not to give the monster a fright. A happy ending and maybe a surprise." Her mummy was loving and very wise. "Good night, my darling," she softly whispered and kissed her cheek when she slightly whimpered. "Sleep sweetly and rise up with the sun. I love you so much, my tiny one." End poem.
Oh, bravo.
Yeah.
Absolutely. A brilliant read. Amazing. And Naomi,
thank you.
Let's start with your thoughts.
Oh, yeah, this was delightful. You know, I and funny and just so, just so perfect, you know. And your emphasis as you read it, you know, what a great read. You know, I love the gigantic, really big. And, you know, the talk between the daughter and the mother back and forth, you know, it's just hilarious. And, true, you know, what a great imagination, I mean, you know. I just had
Thank
to
you.
Read it. She named him well. She called him Frog. That was really funny. And, you know, it's just one of the parts that was really funny, you know. Just so witty and clever and, you know, just, you know, had everything, all the components of an amazing story in this, you know, just captivating and enchanting. So very well done all through.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great comment, Naomi, and I have to agree with you. There is definitely some wonderful humor in here, especially with the stanza, you know, she named him well, she named him Frog. And, first thing I have to say is I'm glad you were inspired by more than one prompt. and work them really well into a cohesive story. And, you know, wonderful read. I honestly think this could be easily published as a children's book. And I will say that if you don't already read to children, like at a nursery school or at a library, you should be doing that.
You know? I used to. I don't now, but.
Okay. Okay.
Well,
you definitely have an entertaining voice. And I really like how you used the phrase willy-nilly. Oh, Mommy, you are so silly. Well, dear, you can't add details willy-nilly. Again, wonderful humor and, you know, just a fun word to use. I like your attention to detail, the back and forth conversation between the mother and the child. You know, the magic, this takes us into the magic of storytelling. And I like that your rhyme, you know, flows really nicely, but without, like, it's not forced, and so it doesn't interrupt the flow of the story itself. You know, a wonderful ending. You know, I like how, you know, there's that kind of, that gentleness and the tenderness of a mother who's watching over, watching a special child sleep. And just, you know, an excellent story all the way through and very well done.
Thank you.
And Jean, your thoughts?
Oh, you know, I thought this was an excellent piece. I thought it was so very well done. I love the tale within the tale. You know, you have a mother and daughter have their own story, and then the mother's telling a story within that. And I thought that was, there was something about that that really stood out to me. Your voice was wonderful for reading this for us. It definitely was. And your emphasis, as everyone says, just fell in all the right places. You really brought it to life and showed those layers of the two different tales. And I thought that was enjoyable and cleverly penned. So great job, Celtic Queen. I loved it. And just
thank
so
you.
Everybody's
thank
there,
you.
You're very welcome. We have another caller. I believe we have Felon on the line. Felon, is that you?
Yes, that's me.
Hey, Felon.
Hello,
glad you could join us.
Hey, I'm sorry I missed the read, but I did get to read through the piece. And what really, I'm very envious of that last line, sleep sweetly and rise with the sun. I love you so much, my little tiny one. That is just absolutely perfect and just whimsical and just endearing. And I would love to have heard your voice in it. So this is just a great piece.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there, Felon. Wonderful comments, everybody. And thank you, Celtic Queen. I'm glad you were inspired and able to call in and read that yourself.
Amen.
I am too. I really enjoyed writing this.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I always like hearing that people had fun. You know, writing.
Yeah.
I think that's very important. All right. And I'll go ahead and have us move on to the next write, which is The Morrigan by Nam Yaw. And Jean, could you give that a read for us, please?
Sure, if I can find the room. There it is. I found the room. Yay. Tell you, I'm challenged.
What?
Nobody knows it, but I am. Okay, let me see now. This is The Morrigan by Nam Yaw. She stands atop the highest tree branch overlooking the killing field. The bed attends to her bringing word of the battle, the number of the fallen, the names of those who remain fighting on blood-soaked earth. She takes flight, savoring the cold of that war-begotten sky. Arching when then diving, spurring on her warriors to great heights of martial glory. Her voice incites the frenzy on her enemies on the field, even as her smiles zoom upon them. At sunset, when all warriors are spent, she gathers the clothes of the dying and washes them in the stream, a last act of respect for the valiant. Then the Morrigan flies up again to make her roost in the highest tree branch, again to take watch over the battlefield until the next skirmish begins. and poem.
Great read there, Jean, and what a wonderful dark tale by Mamyaw. And Felon, I'd like to start with your thoughts.
I am just in awe of this piece. This has got to be one of my favorites by her. There's just so much in it. I mean, each stanza, I think, just stands on its own. And what really got me was at sunset when the warriors are spent, she gathers the clothes, the dying, and washes them in the stream.
Yeah.
Of the respect of for the valiant. I mean, I think that even because she's the one that's, you know, going out there and, you know, she's looking over the killing field, but yet her, you know, the word of the battle, the number that's fallen, it's just that person that, you know, stands over the, takes care of those who are dying, the ones that are fighting, but yet I think she has a little something to do with that battle too. So, I mean, I think this is just a great whimsical story, and I think it's just very well written.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. A wonderful mythology within this, right, and the whole idea, as you said, of somebody who watches over those who die on the battlefield. And Celtic Queen, your thoughts?
I'm trying to organize my thoughts. I enjoyed the poem. I was trying to figure out what Bybee and Morrigan are, but I think I got it. It's a sad story, very sad. I mean, you can tell that from the first stanza when it refers to the killing field. She knows, or that her watchers, the Bybee, know the names of those who remain fighting. That's talks about what kind of a leader she is. And the Morrigan is the leader, I assume, because it talks about her taking flight, spurring her warriors to greater heights of martial glory. A good leader in a bad situation. And it's told very well. The very short lines keep you going on there, like she's looking around quickly to see what's happening. The short lines lead you on to that. But
absolutely. And I like that phrase, a good leader in a bad situation. And the Morrigan is actually an ancient Irish goddess of war, battle, prophecy, sovereignty, and other powers.
How does it fit? I haven't seen the picture. How does it fit with the,
I put
with
it
the
up,
picture? Does
I put it?
It
up in the... I put it up in the room if you want to go see it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. And I think that it actually fits really well with that picture. Like, I don't know if the artist herself intended that to be a picture of the Morrigan, but there is a very goddess-like kind of vibe to the artwork. So I could definitely see that working. So thank you for putting that up, Naomi. And Naomi, your thoughts on Mamyaw's right?
Yeah, well, I was like, I had to go see that prompt, absolutely, you know, to feel the whole depth of, capture the whole depth of this poem, which is so beautifully written. And I think it captures it so well, like the darkness there and the crows above her, you know, there's just that feeling in that whole artwork that you get inside of this poem. I love how she can write in such a way, Mamyaw, that captures the flow, you know, the action taken, like in the stanza, she takes flight, savoring the cold of the war-begotten sky, arching, then diving, spurring on her warriors to great heights of martial glory, you know, and then she goes on to her voice incites a frenzy on her enemies. And, you know, just from beginning to end, this is just amazingly well written, Mamyaw, you know, all the way through. Just brilliant writing here. Bravo.
Absolutely. And I like that you mentioned here that the idea she doesn't just use the imagery. She brings in, as you said, movement and sound. And that really adds to the depth of the story. I thought this was a wonderful dark run. I really liked the imagery of those remaining blood-soaked earth during the cold of that war begotten Scott. Here's a goddess of war because who is within her element. And at sunset, when all warriors are spent, she gathers the clothes of dying and washes in the stream, a last act of respect for the valiant. I really liked those lines because there was a certain kind of spirituality within the mythology of this rite, within that action of, you know, showing respect to the dead. I also like that I had to Google the Morrigan because, to me, any time of home leads me to learn something new. I always think that's a wonderful thing. So just absolutely a beautiful rite here, ma'am. Yeah, very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, I think Christine did an excellent job with this piece. In the dark piece, the deep thoughts, and the respectful tone throughout. Not only did she carry that in her words, you know, about the last act of respect for the valiant, it just had this quality about it that seemed quite quite respectful all the way through, at least in my brain. Maybe, you know, maybe I just got lost in that last sentence and went, yeah. But I felt that. I did. And I thought it was really well written. I thought it was a great take on that prompt. You know, it was like a great pull on that, you know. And I feel bad because I didn't know how to say vibe. But, hey, live and learn, right? Didn't know till I got to the author's notes. But definitely a wonderful, wonderful piece. You know, one of Christine's best. So thanks, Christine.
Absolutely. Great comments there. All right. And up next we have Trolls, Terradiddles by Diane D. And we have a recording for that one. So, Jean, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Let me see what I can do. Here we go.
Trolls, Terradiddles by Diane D. Once upon a time in a faraway land, a magical place where mushrooms grew like purple coneflowers in May, and trolls would talk in terradiddles, where bubbles blew from tadpoles like white floaties from dandelions, and earless puffy rabbits granted wishes to all of the village maidens, where elves rode atop winged horses, trolls lived beneath the drawbridge, and castle towers loomed far, far up, overseeing a tiny hamlet called Obed. In the hamlet lived the basket girl, Ariel, flowing bronze hair draped over her slightly slanted emerald green pupils that looked caramel in the moonlight, weaving baskets out of willow weeds could bring 100 jewels a day. Creels made of wicker were worth 200. But Ariel's family needed double that. Tariffs required to live in the village could be as high as 500 jewels. But star money was needed to bribe the nasty trolls to lift the drawbridge. Ariel's father would walk that bridge nightly to sate that wretched queen. Failing to deliver the jewels as ruled is to be swiftly discarded from Obed. One night, beneath a Bible-black sky, Fergus set off with Ariel's brothers, Naveen and Finn, both quite ready to break down the trolls' terradiddles. To break down the trolls' terradiddles would earn one star money, which was quite enough to raise the drawbridge. But the trolls allowed three turns only. Upon reaching the entrance to the drawbridge, the decrepit green troll, who smelled like moldy wet spores, raised his wart-rot voice at the three. When first I appear, I seem mysterious. But when I'm explained, I'm nothing serious. What, therefore, am I? Naveen snarled back. The moon! The green troll licked his wart-rot lips and smirks at Naveen. Finn, two more chances to earn star money. Arrogant smeared Finn's grimace. Of course, it's darkness, said Finn. Green troll roared in a gut laughter. Would the likes of Fergus like a try? Let's have your sister give a turn, mumbled Fergus. She may know. But a maiden? The queen will bust. Maidens shall not enter the castle. Ariel realized her brother's doubts. Maiden or master, the mind works as our father taught us, my brother. But I, as a maiden, just will not fail. So Ariel begged the puffy, earless bunny to grant her just one wish. Granted, Ariel, smiled the rabbit. I wish I knew the riddle's answer. That's it, squealed the puffball. What? What's it? Wailed Ariel. Why are you talking in riddles? No, Ariel, riddle is the answer. With time passing quickly, Ariel dashed across the drawbridge. With the queen's jewels in hand, she pounded on the castle door. Just then, a handsome prince, with ebony hair and hazel eyes, gazed down into wizened pupils. Gabriel swept her off her feet. Prince Gabriel made a princess of Ariel, and she moved into the west tower of the queen's castle. Fergus no longer paid for tariffs, and they lived happily ever after. End poem.
Wonderful read and write, and great choice of background music. It had a wonderful bounce to it. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, you know, if you can make a, if you're not making a recording of your poem is the next best thing, because then we get the poetry in your voice. Naomi, let's start with your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, Pam. The background music she chose, that Diane chose, just went along so well with the mystical and the magical feeling of this poem, you know. Yeah, I just loved it. You know, I especially loved the imagery throughout, you know, the color, the use of color, and you know, where bubbles flew from tadpoles like white floaties from dandelions, and earless puffy rabbits granted wishes to all the village maidens. You know, it's just the whimsicalness of all throughout this poem, you know, just a wrap. Beautiful imagery here, and you know, the tale itself is so well told also, you know, just love that the troll and the three wishes here, and you know, and the powerfulness, you know, that's shown that in the female also, you know, that comes out, you know, it's not because that she is a girl that she is less intelligent than those boys, because she comes up with the answer in the end, you know. And, you know, just the ending, like every happy fairy tale in a faraway land, you know, they lived happily ever after. You know, just wonderful, you know, whimsical and wonderful, entertaining from one end to another. Just bravo, Diane, on this piece, so wonderfully written.
It really was, and I have to agree with you. It was great, you know, that she came up, the little girl came up with the So very cool there. Felon, your thoughts?
Oh, I love this. I agree. The music really set the tone, and she has a very lovely reading voice as well. And it would, I could just see her reading to young children because she can draw them in. And it's a very inviting voice. But the tale in itself was, I think, very whimsical. And I do like the riddle or the I'm mysterious, but when explained, I'm not so serious. It's just the riddle. A riddle is just what it is. It's just something simple, but yet it's a choice of the mind and makes you think. So I really like this a lot, and it basically just tells if you just really just be simple, just because you're a girl doesn't mean you can't answer things or get past something that what you're forbidden for. So I think that right there said a lot, and that, you know, there are happy endings to things. It's an excellent story.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And I agree with you that it was really cool that she put a riddle into this. I also thought it was great to go with the choice of using the word taradiddle to represent, you know, the idea of pretentious nonsense or a petty lie. I thought that was really cool. And she had some, you know, really wonderful name choices within this. It also had great rhyme and flow, great imagery. You know, I like that she brings in classic elements of a story, like a hero or heroine that gets challenged, the classic trolls as bad guys. Just really a strong and clever story all the way through, and very well done. And Celtic Queen, thoughts?
Well, I feel like I've just heard every fairy tale that's ever been written in one poem. It was great. Mm-hmm. I kept waiting for what was going to be next. But we've got trolls, and we've got a faraway land, and we've got a beautiful woman, a beautiful girl, and a prince. And it was everything we've ever wanted in a fairy tale all in one. I thought it was great. I just loved it. The music was great behind it, too, because we always, you know, you like music behind your reading, so. That was nice.
Yes, I have to agree. I have to agree. It did add a nice, vibe, a nice to the reading itself. So very cool. Great comments, everybody. All right, and Felon, I got your poem up next, and go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay,
folks, I have to leave. I have to leave. So it's been pleasant.
Okay,
hearing
Celtic.
And talking with you tonight.
Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
I'm going to go.
Thank you for calling in. Have a good night.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Anyway, I was saying that this is off of the prompt 11 as AB with the girl with the ginger hair. And it's called Lox and Amber Sprouts. Where does the ginger exhale from below? Some state it's only a whimsical myth. Dreamers sleep to see the drift amongst life's hope. Believing rest upon the cuffs of the blades of grass. Village of Colorful populated with ginger dragons, known for bringing and spraying off the sweetness to the blooms of jasmine, casting breeze after breeze as they were blowing bubbles, wings trimming coral that fades peach into the heavens lavender, silhouettes outlined off an eastern sky. Night bids farewell as the moon kisses the sun goodnight. New beginning stretches and yawns to the melodies of a red robin song. Nature seeding roots from the depths of every tomorrow. Ginger dragons grace each day exhaling spring's bliss as they soar just beneath non-believers needing proof of something more. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Felon. I really liked this one. I thought it was just beautiful and clever with great imagery. I like that you went with the ginger dragons and the mention of ginger right away, because that's not only like a color, but, you know, also being a spice that has a certain, like a bite to it and a sweetness to it. You just, you know, automatically think of something or a mythological creature that has a kind of spicy sweetness, like perhaps, you know, a dragon. I really like brought in the word village of chlorophyll. Like, you know, that you brought in a scientific word for leaves, for, you know, green nature plants, I thought really added to the cleverness of the rite. Wings trimming coral that fades peach in heaven's lavender, silhouettes outlined off an eastern sky. This makes me think of that series of books where the dragon riders, and but like a condensed. I like that you condensed, you told a full story, but with condensed imagery. But what I really appreciate is that I know for you, 128 words is so I know you stepped a bit out of your box here, and I definitely appreciate that.
Like, you're a wonder. You do that. I mean, when you put these, it just always drags. I don't know what it is about it, but those pictures just drag the writing out of me. So I enjoyed writing this too. So it was a nice, easy, stress-free. It wasn't something intense. It was just something nice, and I need to do that every now and then. So thank you for that.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad you were inspired. And the other thing I really like is here the mention of Jasmine and the mention of the Robin song. So you have a mythological story with the dragons, but you've brought in elements of reality, which I think makes it more relatable. So beautifully written and very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Like every line of this just dances enchantingly off the page. I mean, you know, it's so rich with imagery, with color, with you know, everything. You know, it's just the flow of it too. It's just so beautifully written and read. Of course, you read it so beautifully. You know, I just love, you know, just the idea of having ginger dragons. You know, what, that's so witty and clever right there. I just imagine, you know, this world, this magical kingdom, you know, we're filled with ginger dragons, you know, and casting breeze after breeze as if they were blowing bubbles, you know, and those lines that Pam cited, wings trimming coral that fades peach in heaven's lavender, silhouettes outlined of an eastern sky, you know, that's just so beautiful. But also the ones that follow, you know, the moon kisses the sun goodnight, new beginning stretches and yawns to melodies of a red robin song. This just sings, you know, it's so beautifully written, Felon. Just bravo on this piece, you know, from top to bottom.
Thank you.
And Jean, your thoughts?
She's stuck on mute.
I think so.
Yeah, always. Always. You know, it's just the way it feels anyway. Listen, I thought this was excellent. And it was a wonderfully penned brevity. Although, as Pam noted, this is really not a brevity for you, but it's a brevity. You know, I mean, you write a lot of really short pieces. I love this story you created here, spring, ginger dragons, the moon kissing the sun goodnight. You know, it's just so full of great imagery and thoughts. I really loved it. So nice work.
Thank you. The ginger dragon to me, you know, resembles the lightning bugs when first spring comes. And the ginger dragons, I think, you know, Pam, you nailed it, because it is that spice, because, you know, from winter to spring, it comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb, is what they say, I think. And so that's what that was what I was trying to capture from that.
Oh, so. Very cool. Mm-hmm. I like that. That's great.
Thank you.
All right. Up next, we have The End by Casey Day. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So, Jean, whenever you're ready.
You betcha. Here we go.
The End. After Earth was dead and gone, those who were left just floated on. In giant ships they flew through the air, their imaginations took them there. One day, out of the great blue sky, waves crashed against the ship. Oh my! From nothingness came deep blue seas that sparkled brighter than memories. Out of the water shot great big spouts. Now they had wonders to wonder about. What was underneath the sea? A whispering song? What could it be? They landed the ship upon the water. With peering eyes, both sons and daughters gazed over the ship's great bow. They had to know, they knew, somehow. Then from the sea came a serpent's tail. It slashed the waves and blew the sails. A mighty wind blew the ship off course, filling the dreamers with pits of remorse. Out of the waves came a stranger. They were worried they were all in danger. They grabbed their weapons ready to kill, but the sea around them became still. She swam to the ship with human-like strokes. Nearing the edge, she pulled on the ropes, half human, half serpent. She climbed to the top, swung up and threw her long tail on the dock. They all stared in wonder, but one little boy ran up to her, throwing his hands up, rejoiced. I prayed for a savior to come free us all. This is our salvation after the fall. Nobody moved, but his mother cried out, come back, please, she'll kill you, no doubt. But the serpent held her hands out to the child, singing a song sounding strong and wild. Salvation will come to those who believe. Freedom is found in your own memories. If you can fathom hope for new days, the future will find you. It comes out in waves. Her voice lulled the people and they fell asleep, except for the boy, who knew it was a dream. He crept to the edge of the ship with his friend, and both dove into the abyss without end.
Wonderful read and write there, Casey. Thank you for the sound quality. It is very much appreciated. And Fallon, let's start with your thoughts.
I am in awe and awe and awe. This was beautifully written, but also she told it so beautifully as well. This is just like a new age Dr. Seuss for me. I mean, this is so polished and so well written, and it just flows so, just harmonious. I mean, it just like it was a song, like it was meant to be. And I mean, to me, for you to get your get rhymed down that smooth, that is very talented. That's a very talented writing. I just enjoyed it, and I could see me reading this to my granddaughter. I mean, it's just wow. I think this should be published. I really do. This is just an amazing piece.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. This would be a wonderful story to read to or play for a grandchild or a child. And this is definitely a contest, you know, in a show that has quite a few rights that have me in awe as far as people's ability to a story from the prompts. So great comment there, Fallon. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, this is just, it has just such a lyrical magic to it, you know, the flow. It just flows like a song. You could hear it, you know, and it has like an old fable aura around it, of somebody who would sail on ships would recount this, you know, or sing this song. Yeah, it's just enchanting from one end to the other, you know, just bravo, bravo, Casey Day on this right. I just loved it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree with you that this is enchanting and magical. There's a wonderful rhyme and flow to this that moves the story along. And I also like how there's, you know, I think all good stories have an underlying, deeper message, you know, and here it's the whole idea of those who sleep and don't see with eyes wide open, the realms beyond the physical. You know, and I think that's, to me, that even, you know, in childlike stories or that could be read to children, there can be that deeper underlying message so that when we look back at them as adults, we suddenly see it with different eyes, with a different heart, you know. That, you know, I like how she puts the characters in here, like the protective mother and the boy who is so excited. It's so, you know, he has that exuberance that a young person has. Just a great write all the way through. And but I really like Then From the Sea Came a Serpent's Tail, Slashed the Waves and Blew the Sails, the sense of movement and imagery. And then they all stared in wonder, but one little boy ran up to her, throwing his hands up, rejoiced. And to me, I really like that touches on the idea of the innocence of a child when it comes to faith. You know, just a wonderful story and very well done. And all right, on to the next poem. And so many great writes tonight. I'm very happy.
Oh, yeah.
And up next we have For Raven's Call by Orence. Do have a recording for that? So, Jean, whenever you're ready.
You got it.
For Raven's Call by Orence. House abandoned, swing set still, spider webs on windowsills, tricycle rusted red, Raven's Call, the past, the dead, left to hunger, small and torn, every endless night till morn. Made of thorns and acid rain, still wandering, a soul in pain. No comfort found in friends or kin, that twilight soul still wandering. Those birds of darkness, birds of sin, flocked around her, gave her wings. Broken angel, shining dim, still wandering and wandering. You'd hardly know she's there at all. For Raven's Call, for Raven's Call. And poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Orence. Thank you for the recording. It is very much appreciated. And Naomi, your thoughts?
My first thought was a very poignant write, you know, very seizing. You know, she just took that prompt and just flew with it, you know, just, and the read, by the way, was just amazing, the read. And, the way she starts out with the house abandoned, the swing set still, spider webs on windowsills, tricycle rusted red, Raven's Call, the past, the dead, you know, that she just sets the in beautiful imagery there, just sets the scene for all the following, the deep darkness that follows, you know, the pain with the acid rain and the soul in pain there. Just a wonderful, a gorgeous write, brilliant write, you know, all through. Just so well done.
Absolutely. I have to agree with you. Well said there. Felon, your thoughts?
Oh, I'm in awe of this one too, because you know, a flock of ravens are would be considered an unkindness. They're called unkindness, and I think this really is unkindness to this child. the iconic world that it brought into, to be, you know, the abandonment of the house and the swing set of what it used to be, you know, the Raven's Call, the past, the dead, you know, it's just wow. And her read was absolutely stunning. I mean, just every word, I cling to every one of them. And for me to be like that when someone's reading, it's very hard to get my attention to that. But yet she just draws me in, and I was just every word for word. So this is just another amazing write, just great talent tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. And I like that you brought up that a flock of ravens is called an unkindness, and that this is about an unkindness towards a child. And within those first lines, and I have to agree also with Naomi that when you said that it has a deep darkness to it, it really does. And in the beginning, where it mentions the spider webs on windowsills, tricycle, rusted red, you know, there's a real sense of abandonment. You know, and what I like about this is because of the way she wrote the stanzas, where she kind of had it flowing in certain lines, like separating the words. It really felt like I felt like the imagery of the way the stanzas was placed worked well with the idea of the ravens taking off, of the flying away. Such a painful rite. You know, you can tell that there's somebody that here who has been hurt over and over again, in a sense of it just really has an emotional impact. No comfort found in friends or kin, that twilight soul still wandering. Those birds of darkness, birds of sin, flocked around her, gave her wings. You know, and you know, sometimes it's the people we least expect that give us our wings, and those that you expect will take care of a child don't, and that is, you know, sadly the hypocrisy of the world. And once again, another wonderful rite that tells a story but has a deep underlying message. So beautifully written and very well done. And let's see what we got next. All right. Up next, we have The Frog and the Fairy Princess by Martha Gettle. And we have a recording for that. So, Jean, whenever you're ready.
I don't think I saw one for her, Pam.
What? Oh, no. Oh, you're right. You know what? I think this one actually didn't have a recording. I think it was one of the rare ones that... Well, she has a recording now, but I know she didn't have it earlier.
Go ahead and read another one. I'll see if I can hook it up.
Okay, well, all right. Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Let's see what we got here that I want to grab. Oh, there's so many that I want to, but we'll go with this one. All right. All right, so I'm going to put up another poem, and that is going to be Snapdragon and Violet by Rose Winter 515. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. Snapdragon and Violet. Auntie Snapdragon and Violet are reading a bedtime story. They love being in a fairy world where they become flower fairy and purple dragon. Our friends enjoy singing songs with harmony and rhythm, hip-hop and jog and jive, magic in their lives. We meet them as they go abroad, cruising on an ocean liner. Room service is first rate. Nothing is too much trouble. They leave the ship when they reach the tropical island, full of beautiful birds of many colors, and fish who swim in the sea, gleaming and shining with scales so bright. Here our two friends become the avatars, flower fairy and purple dragon, where they stay with their good friends, the tropical flowers. They stay with them for a couple of hours before returning home to bed, ready for the next morning when they wake up again as Violet and Auntie Dragon.
and poem.
Wonderful read there, Naomi. And I think this is just absolutely a delightful write. I love the childlike innocence of this. It was beautifully written and very well done. And Felon, your thoughts?
Yes, first of all, Naomi, you did an amazing read on this as well. I think you really brought it to life, and you gave it, you know, gave it attitude in the right way as far as the certain the way you pause at certain things. I think you just really were able to read it perfectly, other than if it was the author that wrote it, read it. But it says, you know, I like where it says that they love being in a fairy world where they become fairy, flower fairy and purple dragon. But yet they're still saying violent and the snapdragon. I think that's kind of cute. You know, they're kind of just changing, altering themselves just a little bit, but yet they're having just a wonderful time, and they even go on like a little, you know, sail to somewhere else. And I think this is very perfect for like a child, like telling the story, because it's simple and it's to the point, and it's not too challenging where a child could not gather what we're trying to say. So I think it's just very whimsical, and it just gives the children something beautiful to read, and also the colors, and it's just a bright read. I enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. Well said there, Felon. And Naomi, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, right away when I was reading this, I was thinking of all the way down of a video game, you know, and she did mention they became their avatars. You know, you become these characters, these avatars inside of a video game. And this just made me think of the magical world of a child's game, you know, with all the colors, like Felon said there, and all the imagery throughout. This would just be perfect. And, you know, snapdragon and violet, you know, that become flower fairy and purple dragon and the friends of tropical flowers, you know, on this magical island. Yeah, this would make a great video game. So just a brilliant write throughout. Just enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Really liked, as you guys mentioned, the use of color and imagery, and how it did have that feel of, you know, like, well, I liked that it was about an aunt and her niece spending time together. I liked that they both had flower names, Snapdragon and Violet. And then the use of the using the imagination and how they go off within their minds on these adventures together. There's a real sense of bonding within this rite, and of the mind going to those wonderful places of imagination. I just think this is a great rite all the way through, and very well done. And all right, and now I'm going to go ahead and up Martha, the Frog and the Fairy Princess, and Jean, if we have that SoundCloud, whenever you're ready.
The Frog and the Fairy Princess by Martha Gettle. The frog went out on the pond, searching for the witch's wand. If he found it, then he just knew he could make his dreams come true. The witch had hid the wand so well, and where it was she would not tell. The frog, he loved the fairy princess so, that where he had to he would go. The frog was strong and he was brave, he'd do anything the princess would say. The princess was out there on her own, but he just knew he could bring her home. He came upon the witch one night, and the witch and him began to fight. The witch was strong and she could move, but the frog, he had much to prove. The frog was strong and he was brave, he'd do anything the princess to say. The princess was out there on her own, but he just knew he could bring her home. The frog began to quickly dance. To keep up, the witch had not a chance. The frog was winning, all could see. The witch had no sense of melody. The frog was strong and he was brave. He'd do anything the princess to save. The princess was out there on her own, but he just knew he could bring her home. The king had proclaimed from his throne, the winner could take the princess home. Yes, he declared to everyone's surprise, the princess was the winner's prize. The frog was strong and he was brave. He'd do anything the princess to save. The princess was out there on her own, but he just knew he could bring her home. The fight was over and the frog had won. He had beat the witch and it was done. With just one kiss they could see then the frog a prince had always been.
Thank you for the recording, Martha. It's very much appreciated. Oh, that has just a delightful. It's absolutely delightful. I love a story where the hero is the small one and he comes out victorious. You know, just really great there. I enjoyed that she told a story in song form. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I thought this was so witty and, you know, just enchanting from beginning to the end. I love that it was a dance competition. You know, the frog began to quickly dance. To keep up, the witch had not a chance. The frog was winning, all could see. The witch had no sense of melody. I thought that was just, you know, humorous. And, you know, you can just see it there, the witch trying to dance, you know, but she's all awkward and clumsy. And the little frog dancing all over the place. Yeah, I thought this was just so creative and just a wonderful write from start to finish. So bravo, Martha.
Absolutely, I have to agree. And that one part was really clever and fun with the frog dancing. A very cool comment. And Felon, your thoughts?
I just love Martha, as I said. She makes your heart smile. I mean, because this is just a very lighthearted write. And what really, you know, I think the frog cheated because he's got a little hip in his step, you know, a little hip and a hop into his step. So he beat her off the rim. But I think that... this is just an excellent, excellent write, and just I love the fact that she put it to a melody, and it takes courage to come online and to sing that. And to me, I envy that because I wish I was able to do that and do it so great as she does. So great job there, Martha. And I would like to meet that little frog. Maybe I'll find my prince after all. I'm just stuck with the witch.
Right. there you go. Great comment, Felon. Yeah, I really liked the chorus of this, the repentance of the frog was strong and he was brave. He'd do anything the princess to save. And I like that it's a story of bravery and a story of, you know, just, bravery and being willing to go out there and rescue someone you know needs rescued. So, just absolutely an amazing write and very well done. And all right, and let's see what we have next. Up next we have Wally Lets Her Go Walking by Kay Heartless, and it goes like this. The angel of dead covers her head. If not, she knows she'll soon be dead. Spools of her abaya unravel to threads. her shift gets shorter, she'll soon be dead. The boys like blackbirds round her, they consort her, she'll soon be dead. She walks in daylight, buys Wally bread. If out past curfew, she'll soon be dead. Been dealt decent cards without a spread. If she shows her hand, she'll soon be dead. She's writing stories that remain unread. Whisper wisdom, she'll soon be dead. If Allah's a woman, she's sure unwed, or words of wisdom would go unsaid. She must look before she treads. Belief's a burden, fears must be fed. Negotiate freedoms, plead and beg. Wally lets her go walking, the living dead. Bleeds to be bred, the angel of dread. End poem. I have to say, that is just absolutely stunning with its end rhyme. And with the repetitiveness of similar phrases, it feels very much like a form poem. And Felon, I have a feeling this is one that you really would like. What are your thoughts?
I really like this because no matter how, and I like the closing line, bleed to be bred, the angel of dread. You know, you dread everything, and that's, just, I mean, it will die. You know, you're dead. No matter what you do, you're dead. And no matter how much wisdom, doesn't matter how much you are granted in this world or anything, you still tread the burdens of life, and that, you know, your fears are still going to be fed, and you negotiate your freedoms, but you still are going to beg. I just think this is just wow. Just wow. It's very dark. It's right along my lines. It's a wonderful brevity, and it offers so much in this message. So just amazing job. Another great, talented write.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. Great comment there. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I agree with Felon all the way. This is just a beautiful word twister, you know. Play with words here. Dark right that is so brilliantly written and composed all throughout, you know. And it tells a story also. So just a wonderful right throughout here by Kay Harkless there. Just bravo.
Absolutely, I have to agree. And like I said, really great end rhyme, and the use of the repetitive soon be dead, you know, it made that message hit home, you know, and the whole idea that, you know, it's a fairy tale, it's a dark fantasy story, but it has that sense of reality to it, that harsh, horrible sense of how so many women around the world have to protect themselves, you know, have to watch out for themselves or watch out for each other, which is sad. And, you know, it's unfortunate that that's too often the kind of cruel world that we live in. I thought this was a wonderful take on this particular prompt. You know, been dealt decent cards without a spread. I thought that was great. And negotiate freedoms, plead and beg. Wally lets her go walking, the living dead. I'm not quite sure who Wally is, but I assume it's a mythological figure. And I'll have to make sure to look that up and check that out because, I like that she really speaks on the whole idea of that, you know, women have the right to be protected and to be equal and not to have to fear going out in public. Like I said, I just think this is a powerful rite and very well done. All right, so we'll have some carryovers. I think about 3 or 4. I'm not sure of the exact number. And, of course, once I know where they're going to be put, I'll make sure to let people know. And thank you to Phil and Naomi for being amazing co-hosts as always. I truly appreciate you both. Thank you to Celtic Queen Tom and Felon for calling in. Thank you to Robbie for holding the board. You're all really awesome. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. Well, we truly appreciate you all. Just an amazing amazing night of rites that
I have
thoroughly enjoyed. And
awesome prompts, Cam.
Well, thank you so much.
Always, Cam. Great show.
Thank you, Dean.
Everybody.
It truly was. It truly was. All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night, ladies. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.